Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 191. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And a bit of a special episode here today. I mean, for one, we are going to review Glass, a film I've been looking forward to for, well, since Split, but ultimately since Unbreakable, so almost 20 years. But first, and we're going to save that till the end, so we can talk spoilers at the very tail end of that. And if you don't want to hear that, just turn off the episode there. But we're going to start off with spoiler-filled reviews of Batman 1989 and Batman Returns, as well as Chris's review of Replicas. But yeah, let's get into it. I mean, you know, before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, before the Christopher Nolan Batmans, before the X-Men movies, before almost everything, there was...
I think really only Superman was kind of before it.
Yeah, there was Superman, and that was really good. You know, and that came out, you know, a couple years before I was born. And it was good. It was a very good movie, but, you know, I've always liked Batman more, I think, even before there was a movie. And so, like, when this thing dropped in 1989, the first Batman movie, well, there was a one in the 60s, right? That was, like, based off the TV show.
There is the Batman the movie, which is the Adam West, Burt Ward film.
We'll set that aside, although I will use it to make a comparison probably at some point. But this was kind of the first big thing. And I remember, so I'm like, what? I'm like seven and a half years old when this came out. I remember it being a huge, huge deal. Came out June 19th, 1989. Budget of $35 million. Went on to make a box office of $411 million.
Big numbers in 1989.
For sure. I mean, it'd be big numbers today. I mean, not for a superhero movie, but it would be big numbers for any.
Yeah.
You know. It was a huge, yeah, and especially for then. It was just a huge thing. I just remember when the summer came out, like, that was fucking it. I remember, like, all these, like, McDonald's Batman ads. I don't know if that was for the first Batman or if it was one of the later ones. But it was, like, McDonald's ads with fucking Alfred and shit in it. And, of course, I remember, you know, later on, the animated series coming out. And being a huge fan of that. But this was, like, how old were you when Batman 1989 came out?
I would have been like 10 or 11.
Okay.
Probably, so you're like probably 10 that summer. I turned 11 probably at the end of that summer. So, yeah.
Like, do you remember, like, how you felt about it as a kid?
I loved it. Like, it was...
Yeah,
like, came out of it going, like, that was awesome. And yeah. Like, yeah, it was a big part of... you know, it was a big movie for my childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember really loving it as well and thinking it was, you know, like, dark and gritty, and it was just, like, really cool. And, it, you know, we had fucking Jack Nicholson fucking as the Joker, and, you know, it was just, you had that awesome score. You know, and it felt like a cutting edge, like, thing at the time.
Yep.
Revisiting it now, 30 years later, what do you think, Chris?
Wow. Yeah, it's something. It, 30 years later, drawn out from this, it seems almost like a cartoon.
Yeah. My reaction when I was watching it, I was like, this is super, like, campy. Like, it feels like how I remember, like, when I was a kid, I remember, like, the Batman, old Batman show from the 60s feeling very campy, and then seeing this and being like, this is fucking, you know, this is way edgier. And now this feels like that to me. Like, it feels as campy as the old 60s one. Like, it's just fucking...
It's goofy.
Cartoonish. Yeah.
It's very cartoonish. You know, it looks cartoonish in fact, like Jack Nicholson's Joker is, like, I mean, at the time it looks really cool, but now yeah. it's like, you look back at it, it's like, that's absurd looking.
Yeah.
And like the way he acts throughout the film is just absurd. Like, it's not, it's like, and at the time I remember coming out of it and going like, that's real. Like, that's exactly what Batman would be like in the real world. But like, and I mean, I guess as a 10-year-old, you're a fucking idiot, but like looking at it now, it's like, what the hell was this thing?
Like, I think there's part of me that's like, I could never remove how I think I felt about it when I first saw it. Like there is like the nostalgia factor. I think the movie is overall, it's pretty fun still, like, despite the fact that it feels really weird and goofy now.
Yeah, it's that is something that I can give it. It is still kind of fun. Like, Jack Nicholson's performance, Michael Keaton's performances, they're both having fun with it at the very least. And like, that's kind of infectious, and it still makes it enjoyable to watch now.
Yeah, you know, and I don't love Tim Burton, but I do think this is him kind of working at his peak, almost, for me anyways. Like, it was Pee-wee's Big Adventure and this, I think, are like the two movies. I guess I kind of like Edward Scissorhands too, but I really don't like anything else by him. Like, anything he's done, I didn't even like that fucking Big Fish movie that was like a big deal a long time ago now. But
yeah, I'm not a huge Tim Burton fan, but
I don't know what is up with him. Like I don't know. It's hard for me to put into words what I don't like about him. But there's a certain aesthetic that is Tim Burton, and it's just not. I don't love it, and this is probably it at its best though. Like, he does. Like, I don't know. It's just weird watching this now. It's like hard for me to even put into words. Like,
well, cause it's a very weird thing. Cause I mean, we've been removed now 30 years.
I haven't seen it in a long time
at this point. And we have the, like you mentioned, we have the animated series, which is a, it's a cartoon, but it's actually a more serious take on Batman than I think this Batman is.
We
also have you know, the Nolan movies,
which I don't care how people feel about them, I still think they're all amazing. I mean, I don't like the third one, but those things are Batman Begins and Dark Knight. I still love to death.
And they're excellent representations of modern Batman. This is kind of like a throwback to that campy, and it's funny because at the time we both said it, like, at the time it wasn't that, like, but going back now, it's like, this is a little goofy. I really do feel it, like the Marvel movies of today, when people return to them in 30 years, like,
they're going to feel like this.
What the hell is all this? Like, this is goofy. And that said, I still enjoy Batman 1989. Like, it's still fun. Like, there are some really dumb things in it. Like, one that really was kind of like egging at me while I was watching it was, the Joker is—he's having his parade through Gotham.
Yeah,
and he's throwing out money, and Batman comes along, and he's in his Batplane, and he grabs all the balloons that have the toxic gas, and he eventually cuts them, and then he flies straight up into the air into the moon to make the bat symbol, and I was like, wow, like, that's a choice, I guess. They did that.
I remember thinking that was so cool when I was a kid.
You probably, know, like, yeah.
So it's like, still, like, I'm still like, I didn't even question it. There's things in this that are more goofy than they should be at points, I think. For like, I remember one thing I mentioned to you and I did take a note on was, like, you know, this, like, the scene where he goes, like, the Joker goes to kill his boss, you know. And the, like, they kind of undercut, like it's kind of like a gritty scene. Like, he's going to kill a mob boss who, you know, tried to put a hit out on him, basically, right? Like, it's cool. And, like, he's shooting him to death. And then, like, they play, like, this fucking, like, circus music underneath it that, like, undercuts the tension of it and everything. I'm just like, what is with the fucking, like, why would you do that? Like,
well, and that's the, like, so Prince did the music for the movie. And it's weird.
I like some of his, like, original songs and shit.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But it like throws things into like a weird, like
it does
position in a lot of ways. Like, it's like, this is a weird choice. Like, it's like more upbeat and happy than like this entire scene should be.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The Prince music certainly, like, puts its stamp on it. Like, that's the soundtrack is Prince songs.
Yeah.
You know, that and Danny Elfman's score. But it's like, yeah, Danny Elfman's score is like, the main theme is really awesome, but some of the other shit is fucking goofy as fuck. I guess for me though, like, and it's weird because at the time I don't think I liked the Prince songs in it, but I think that's one of the things I dig about this now is that, like, it does date it. It does put its stamp on it, you know, of the time that it came out. And yeah, it is, I guess some of it is weird, but I just kind of dig Prince music more than I used to, I guess.
Yeah, I can see that. That's he's an artist that I've also come around on a lot. Like, I think at the time when this came out, I was like it was one of the, like, got like the soundtrack CD or tape for it or whatever. I was like, and it was like, this is weird.
So, like, I guess that's one of the things for me, though, that I'm happy that the Prince music's there, kind of, because it's just, that makes it Batman 1989. But I just wish that, like, certain things didn't feel as goofy as they did, because a lot of things are cool about this movie. It, you know, like, it is the seed of what we think of as modern Batman. I guess maybe what was the comic that probably all of modern Batman is based on?
Dark Knight Returns. Yeah, they use that for a lot of
But it's like this gives you the like kind of the modern idea of what Batman is, you know, for the first time really on film, other than the '60s one,
right?
You know, and there's a lot like there's things that, like, even though, like, the entire movie looks like a fucking, like, set, it is cool. Like, you know, they got the look of Gotham. It's like this, like, Art Deco design.
It's weird that the entire city is like that. It's really strange. Like, that. That's something that I noticed in that and in Batman Returns. It's like,
yeah,
this entire city is this weird gothic architecture. And it's something I think Nolan's Batman does really well. It's like, you know, there's this old part of Gotham that has this, you know, kind of gothic and dark architecture, but there's also modern Gotham. Like, it's an actual thriving city. We have upgraded at some point.
It's just Chicago. Yeah. Like, there's some, other than the scene when he kills, like, his boss, there's one where, like, there's a scene where he, like, burns a dude to a skeleton.
Oh, in the meeting where he's had the meeting with all the captains.
Yeah, it's like with a hand buzzer. I'm like, I don't know. You could have done the hand buzzer kill, but, like, why did it have to be that cartoonish that he turns into a skeleton? That, like, makes no...
It's so long. It's such a long scene. Like, it's like Tim Burton, like, hey, I got this great idea. Like, we're gonna fry a guy and he's gonna turn into a skeleton and we're just gonna, like, leave the camera. We're gonna linger on it. And it's gonna last way longer than it should. But we don't actually have the special effects for it. So it's gonna be like a big puff of smoke and then, like, a goofy looking skeleton.
One other thing I wanted to touch on, I'm just, like, looking over my notes here, and unfortunately I didn't take notes for Batman Returns, so you might have to get coax some more specifics out of me on that one. But the other thing I thought was weird, and this is going to come up in Batman Returns a lot, is like the sexual angle in this movie. Like, there's like a weird part where Vicky Vale is like kissing Joker all over his fucking suit.
Oh, at the end of the movie in the cathedral.
Yes, and like that alone is kind of weird. And I remember being weirded out by it when I was a kid, like what the fuck. But also being like, I would do that.
It gets weirder. Like Batman Returns amps that up.
Oh, I know, but even that gets weirder too because she like it looks like she's about to go down on him, and then Joker makes this fucking face like ha 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 for like a split second. And boy, oh boy, we'll get into it in Batman Returns, but like that movie is horny as fuck. It's all just people talking about how they want to fuck, but we'll get into that.
Yeah,
in a minute. I don't know. There's a few things, other things. I'll just like I said, I have some notes here. A few other things that stuck out to me. I forgot Billy Dee Williams was Harvey Dent.
Yep.
I didn't even remember Harvey Dent was in this because when I was a kid, Harvey Dent, like, it didn't mean anything to me until the animated series explained to me who he was or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was like a nice surprise. I was like, oh, I didn't know, you know, that he was like his character was in this. And I don't remember Billy Dee Williams being the guy. What were you going to say about that?
I was going to say, they, you know, Two-Face shows up in Batman Forever, but I guess that would be probably like either after or prime time. Like
it was prime. I remember being really stoked for that because I love Two-Face from the animated
series. From the animated series. Yeah.
So unless my memory is fucking wrong, but that's what I remember.
No, you're probably right. Like I think there was a little bit of a delay between Batman Returns and Batman Forever.
Like, quick note on the animated series. I have not revisited it since I was a kid, but when I was a kid, it was my favorite fucking show ever. I raced home from school to fucking watch that shit, and I think it might be my favorite. Like, if it holds up how it is in my memory, it'd be like my favorite version of Batman, basically. Like, yeah. It had like my favorite depictions of the villains, and like easily my favorite villains on that were Two-Face. Like, Two-Face was my favorite. What's his name? Mr. Freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Really good in the cartoon, I think, and will be interesting to talk about in the
movie. We'll talk about that next week.
And this one, I think his name was Clayface.
Clayface,
like his whole body was clay, basically, and that was another cool, like, really cool two-parter story, like his origin. Anyways, just a little side note. I don't know if you wanted to say anything about
the animated series was it came out the same year as Batman Returns. That's when it started. So about 3 years before Batman Forever.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely. Then by that point, I knew who Two-Face was and was, you know, excited for that. So yeah, I don't know. I guess there's a couple other things I wanted to touch on. Like, is Knox a character in the comics at all? Because, like, I don't... Does he ever come back? Other than, like, I think you glimpse him in Batman Returns. Knox is the reporter.
The reporter. Yeah, I don't know.
Or is he just, like, a rip-off of the dude from fucking Superman? Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like,
Jimmy Olsen?
Yeah.
That's definitely who he feels like.
Like, that's... Yeah, something like that. Like, yeah, didn't I see him at the very beginning of Batman Returns for, like, a second? I thought he was going to be in it, and then he wasn't, or am I crazy?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Like, I thought I saw him walking out of a building. I was like, oh, yeah, there's fucking that guy Knox. Like,
He's very, like, familiar-looking, so...
Yeah. This could be part of it. Another thing is, like, I do think that some of the effects look dated now, but they have their charms. The one thing I do wonder is how they did, like, the shield on the Batmobile. Is like that, like, is that, like, stop motion animated, you think? Or just, like, straight up animated or what? Like, could you even tell from
watching it? Yeah, it might have been a stop motion.
Yeah.
That's actually something Tim Burton does fairly well.
Yeah.
He produced like Corpse Bride and what's that? The Disney one. Or no, I guess he didn't do that. I feel like Frankenweenie. Like he's done like stop motion.
Oh yeah, animation
in the past. Nightmare Before Christmas. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was.
But you know, how amazing can you expect the effects from 1989? The look, and in a lot of ways, you know, practical effects. I think in a lot of ways, I still prefer no matter what. I think that like 80s gore holds up like insanely well, but like some stuff like this does look a little goofy now, but still.
Yeah. And it was weird because like I remember like really thinking like the Batman suit was really good. yeah. There are spots in this where like the mask does not look like it is fit on Michael Keaton very well.
I didn't notice that. Like you said, it's too tight or
no, too loose. Like that, really? Like the shots in the plane, like it looks like it's bubbled over on the side. Like
you could notice. I did
like,
not notice.
Like it was something that's just like that's really weird looking. Like
I'll have to keep an eye out for that when I watch this 10 years from now. Again, like I know it sounds like we're like. Well, first of all, like, let's give a verdict on it. Like, where do you fall on it?
If I'm giving a score, I'm going to give it a 3. But coming back to it, and I had seen it probably within the last 10 years or so, and like still thinking like it's still enjoyable.
Yeah,
and I came out of it the same way. Like, yes, it's goofy, but it's in similar way of like being able to like sit down and watch that like the Batman 50s and 60s show, like the TV show with Adam West, like it's just a different take.
Yeah,
and it's fine. Like seeing the two leads here, they really pulled the whole thing through.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it 3 as well. And it did, you know, a lot of our discussion of it made it sound like it's like mediocre or whatever, but it's like,
it's dated. That's all.
It's dated. It's a product of its era. There are things that are great about it. There's some wonderful shots. The Danny Elfman score is fucking fantastic at times. I like the Prince soundtrack. The cast is great. It's just fun. It's a fun movie, but it's impossible for me to watch it now without thinking about like how the whole genre has evolved,
yeah,
and how Nolan did it. And I'm sorry, like I love Nolan's interpretation of the story, you know. So it's like this is always gonna have a special place in my heart, and it's still fun, and I will revisit it, you know, throughout my life. But it just doesn't hold up to how cool it was when it came out. Right. It's still fun.
Yeah, totally agree.
Let's move into more interesting territory here. That's Batman Returns, which was also directed by Tim Burton and released in June 16th, 1992. Had a budget of $80 million and did a box office of $266 million or so. I'll let you start this one off too, Chris.
Where Batman was kind of like, wasn't really an origin story. I mean, I guess in a way it was like Batman was just kind of getting his feet wet at that point. By the time Batman Returns comes around, he's Gotham's hero. Right, like the bat signal is around, and this movie though, wow, like yeah, because like it starts off with like, oh, there's this big kind of attack on a speech outside, and
it starts out with a rich couple
throwing their baby.
They have an ugly baby, and they throw it in the fucking river because it's like deformed.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So like from the get go, you know, this is going to be different.
Like, and honestly, I don't know if that's like the true origin of the penguin or not, but I'm assuming it sounds ridiculous. I don't remember that being how it was in the cartoon or anything else, but like, do you know, Chris? Like, honestly, like
no, but
I think he was just like a rich dude, wasn't he?
It's like there's been different takes on him. There are times when he's just like a short little rich dude. Like short little fat rich dude. And this one, like, he is grotesque. Like,
he's disgusting. And this is a really like committed performance from Danny DeVito, like kind of disturbing actually.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this whole movie's kind of disturbing actually, the movie.
Yeah, let's just get to that point, because this movie is just disturbing throughout. It brings
disturbing, but still maintains that Tim Burton kind of like goofiness. Like,
yeah,
it's dark. It's way darker than the first one, but it's still like fucking like there's penguins shooting rockets and shit too. Like, it's
there's that
weird
walking, hamming it up. There's Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, it's, I don't know. There's Michael Keaton acting weird at points too. Like,
and
everybody is weird in this movie.
This movie is, besides being darker than the first one, is also, like kind of alluded to earlier, way more sexual. Like, way, like,
yeah, it's amped up to 11.
Everyone is just kind of like, do you want to fuck? And, you know, like, Bruce Wayne is trying to fuck Selina Kyle. Batman's trying to fuck Catwoman before, you know, so they don't even realize that they're.
Penguin's trying to screw everybody.
Yeah.
Christopher Walken also, like,
everyone
getting
is
up
talking
on everybody.
Everyone's motivation is fucking, and like, it's just like, it's just like, you know, even like the R-rated, I guess there are no R-rated ones. There's like Logan, but like, I'm thinking of like even the more adult, like newer, like the Nolan ones, like, or like Marvel movies, like none of them are this perverse. Like, this is fucked
up, like,
dude.
Like Deadpool gets a little bit in like that one,
and that's an R. That's a hard R.
But that's about it. Like, you know, Logan gets it for like very mature themes and some like gruesome violence. It's not this. it's weird, awkward. It's
Like, the motivations are like, doesn't the penguin kind of flip on Catwoman at some point because she doesn't want to fuck him? Like that's like it plays into the plot, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's
like
weird.
He feels that, like, there's like a whole scene in his like weird bedroom where he's like gyrating on the bed. She says something about lotion, and he goes scented or unscented, like, and he's holding up lotion containers that he's pulled out of his nightstand. Like,
oh my god, I fucking missed that. And he's so grotesque.
Yeah,
but I do remember, like. Yeah, that's another thing. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer is kit-catting all over around this fucking movie, like, licking herself and shit. There's a part where she, like, fucking grabs Batman's dick and is like, there's the Batman. Or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's pretty fucking, like...
Just seeing, like, where... I don't remember exactly where it happens, but Penguin is there, and, like, I need... Like, he's introduced to Catwoman, who he's already seen, he already kind of knows. It's like, there's the pussy I wanted.
Yeah, like it's like, it's not just the horniness, but like the almost explicitly sexual fucking dialogue and shit in this fucking Batman movie. Like, what the fuck are we doing?
That is legitimately targeted at kids. Like,
yeah,
they were selling, like, Batman Returns, like, toys and shit. Nintendo games, and
like, again, that's what I'm getting to. It's like, it's not, this wasn't like how we think of superhero movies now. Like, it was, you know, and And again, even like the mature stuff, the more mature stuff now is none of it is like as fucking demented sexually as this. So that's a special like part of this movie. And then another thing about this, like for a kid's movie, and I mean, I guess you could accuse this a little bit in the first Batman, but the first Batman is very kind of straightforward and simple. And there's the Joker. He's a bad guy. He's a, you know, a criminal.
Right.
And he gets changed and he wants to do bad things. The plot here is kind of labyrinthian, I think, for a kid. Like, it's just like there's a fucking crooked businessman and he wants to do this. And he's making the Penguin run for mayor to do that. And it's just kind of like, it's almost as confusing as fucking George Lucas's fucking political bullshit in a fucking Star Wars movie. We're just like, dude, you're
losing the thread. Like, they're like,
keep it simple.
Like, there should have been a simple storyline. Why is the Penguin like trying to take over? Instead, you tried to make him this complex character and have these, like, he doesn't have complex motivations, but you have the puppet master, Max Schreck, played by Christopher Walken, like pulling the strings, and like he looks evil as shit with his goofy ass hair, and everything's nuts. This entire movie is nuts.
And it's like you know, there are these complexities to the plot in like the Nolan Batmans, but again, those are targeted towards a more mature audience. Like, they are also rated PG-13, but they're more for adult thinking people.
When they're
this
also
was like a goofy fucking cartoonish movie, but like with this fucking all this political bullshit that if you're 10 years old, I doubt I understood it at the time.
Well, probably not. And like I remember coming out of it being disappointed in the movie, but ultimately liking it. I also think that the looking at it now, like you look at the Nolan stuff and go, yeah, like he has all this politics and stuff, but I do think that a kid can like sit down and watch that movie and still kind of follow the thread.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're here. It's like, you kind of have to work at it, I think, a little bit.
It's
poorly done too. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like one bizarre fucking scene after another, like weird ass shit. Like, there's a scene where he fucking eats fish. Like,
yep.
Like, again, like, this movie's fascinating to me. And this one I probably haven't seen in longer than Batman 89. And so, I don't know. I don't think any of these movies are going to hold up. I'm really worried about the next two. But I don't think 89 quite holds up. I don't think... Like, I think when I was a kid, I recognized that this wasn't as good as the first one, but I still liked it. I think I'm still kind of in that camp because I like what I liked about revisiting this one, despite the fact that it felt like 3 hours fucking long.
It's a long movie. Like, it's over 2 hours long.
I mean, but the first one is too, but the first one,
it doesn't feel that
flies by. This feels episodic, you know, where it's like, okay, now the next fucking like part of the plot we're going into. But like, what I like about it now is how insane it is, like, and how fucking twisted it is. And I'll admit, Michelle Pfeiffer's still hot as hell as the Catwoman. Like, I still think one of the better, like, you know, interpretations of the Catwoman. I mean, better than the fucking Halle Berry movie.
For sure.
So, like, this has, like, this weird value to me. I do think, I like Penguin's crew in this way more than Joker's crew in the first one. Like, these fucking clowns are fucking insane looking and shit. And just the insanity of he has penguins fucking with rockets strapped to them and shit like that.
Yeah, it's almost like Tim Burton's like, well, we went goofy. They let me go pretty goofy with the Joker. Let me see how goofy I can go.
As well as, like, how much I could get away with before this is fucking rated R for fucking and fucking disgusting ass fucking grotesque shit. I don't know. Like, it was weird. Like, And again, I kind of admitted to you before the show, like, I was kind of, like, folding laundry while watching it and shit like that. Like, so it was, like, almost like a background movie, but, you know, I paid attention to it enough to be able to point out all these things. Yeah. And again, there's some weird fucking things in this movie that, like, I don't understand. So, like, near the beginning, like, the Penguin's initial motivation for doing anything in this movie is that he wants to ascend from the fucking sewers and be, like, accepted into the city. And I'm just like, does he not realize he could just fucking walk out of the sewer and go live outside of the sewer? Like, it's fucking, it's Gotham City. It's basically New York City. You probably look about as good as half of the fucking ghouls that actually live in the fucking city.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? Like, it's like, he's like, because you were dumped there by your parents when you were a kid, you have to fucking live there sewer.
Forever.
Like, I mean, maybe I'm thinking too hard about a fucking kids movie, but it's like, that's a weird thing for, like, a big part of the plot to hinge on. I mean, did that strike you when you were watching it, too?
Like, yeah, it was always weird. Like, all right, he thinks himself a monster, but, like, he wants to be taken seriously.
It's like, just go.
But, like, you could come up and, like, you don't have to live underground. You could live with the homeless dudes. Like,
do whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, it's such they a weird conceit.
Share some whiskey or something. I don't know. Like,
and then there's the origin of the Catwoman too, where it's just like
she's murdered and eaten by cats. Like,
yeah, she's like murdered. A whole bunch of cats are there and surround her, and then she wakes up well, she somehow survived falling out of a fucking, like, skyscraper, and then fucking goes home and is like, makes a fucking hot ass fucking cat costume, and like, she's the Catwoman. Like, what was the like? It makes no fucking sense. Like
the entire time I'm like watching that change, that shift from the moment where Max Schreck pushes her out the window to her finally becoming Catwoman. Like, it's like one of those movies, like, where they bump their head and, like, get a different personality, or, like,
jump into somebody else's body. That's a great point. Like, exactly.
Because she is not, like, this, like, overtly sexual person at all, but, like, she bumps her head, or, like, dies, I guess, and gets eaten by cats. It, like, makes her into, like, a horn bucket 2.0. She's, like, running around, wants to fuck everybody.
I mean... Yeah, yeah. And, another thing that struck me as weird, like, right away, is how much Christopher Walken's hair stands out. Like, how goofy, crazy. And I'm like, so I looked, you know, I, like, started reading up, like, fucking Wikipedia and this shit. And, like, I assumed that he looked like that because that's how he looks in the comics or something. But no, he's only appeared in Batman Returns. That's the only thing Max Schreck has ever been in. So I'm like... So just Tim Burton just decided that was, like, the look that, like, why couldn't Walken just look like Walken? Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Right. But that's another weird thing, too, right? Because, like, they paint up this Max Schreck guy as, like, oh, he's the favorite son of Gotham. And I'm like, that's literally Bruce Wayne. Like,
yeah,
Bruce is supposed to be that guy.
Yeah, essentially all around. That's basically what he is. But, like, this, they're making this guy out to be, like, I wonder if they're trying to do, like, a Donald Trump type thing. Like, that's, like, and maybe that's, like, partially why they gave him goofy hair or some shit. But, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm going for a stretch here. But, like, the guy is, like, basically a corrupt businessman. And, like,
yeah,
it's kind of always been known. Like, I guess the problem, and, like, not to get political here, but, like, it's, like, everyone's known, especially, like, in New York since, like, the 90s, that, like, who Donald Trump is. But then the rest of the country got fed this, like, apprentice version of him that was a lie. Yeah. That's, and they believed it. So, like, middle America watched The Apprentice. They loved it. And they believed that that was an accurate representation of who Donald Trump is.
And, like, anybody in the Northeast Corridor, like, is able to go, like,
no,
this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he literally bankrupted an entire city.
Yeah, like, you probably know better than me. You probably had it ingrained since you were a kid that this guy's bad, I wonder, right?
Yeah, like, well, like, because, like, early on it was like, oh, like, because you grow up, you live.
It's just a bridge guy.
I live not too far from Atlantic City. My parents would go there every once in a while, and like, you know, we would go into like, we were there when like the Trump Taj Mahal opened, like, and like stuff like that. So it's like, you know the Trump name, but then like as time goes on, like you learn like he's a shitty dude, shitty business practices, and he basically bankrupted Atlantic City.
Yeah. Now he's doing it on a larger scale.
Yeah.
So anyways, I mean, look, Batman Returns for me is not as good as Batman, but it is way more fascinating almost. And I almost, there's like a part of me that like digs it more for being so fucking fucked up and weird.
I could see that.
Like ultimately, if you make me choose, I go, no, I like Batman 89 more. It feels like the classic standard. Not even like a, like you said, it's not an origin story. They do touch on his origin in it, but it just feels like this is the basic Batman story, and here's his main villain, you know?
Here's this goofy, weird, nutty Batman story.
Yeah.
So, like, outlandish and strange.
That, like, I also dig it. Like, and I'm going to give this one also 3 stars, but, like, it's mostly because it's kind of an insane experience.
I am not.
So, okay.
I'm going to give it 2. It's like there are things about it that I find fascinating, just like you do. But
yeah,
ultimately, I don't think it's a good movie at all. I think there are cool things about it. There are definitely some cool set pieces, some crazy performances. But I look at it and go, like, well, this is not good. Like, it's just doesn't do it for me at all. I said that before we started this endeavor. And I'm sticking by that. I think Batman Returns is a bad movie. I'm gonna go 2 stars on it.
Okay. I mean, I can't really fault you, especially when like you start to point out some of the really ridiculous plot points and shit, like, or like character motivations and shit that we touched on. Like, I hear you, but it's fucking whatever. Like, it is what it is. I mean, I had fun revisiting these 2 movies in a way, but also at the same time I was like, man, shit has fucking evolved from here. And I'm like both fascinated and terrified going into the final 2. Like, I have not seen them since they came out, because I sort of liked them at the time, but then like very quickly people turned on them, and you know, they became like, these became like the redheaded stepchilds of the series. But you know, definitely Batman Forever is remembered better, and even at the time it was liked better. It was more split though than either of these first 2. From this is how I remember it being. Anyways, you can tell me if you
remember. Yeah, well, there's so I don't know, and really, like, I look at it and go, I'm not really sure where the criticisms at the time came from, because looking at Batman and Batman Returns, like, they're goofy as fuck as well.
Yeah, but then it gets some of the goofier. Like, yeah.
A lot of the complaints were like, you know, they went very cartoonish with the villains and Jim Carrey and
we switched directors going into these two. And so first 2 were directed by Tim Burton. And then I think the last 2 are also, they're both directed. I want to say
Schumacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. He did both of them.
I think they're both.
And you know, he brings his own really goofy kind of sensibility to the films. But I honestly, like, this is going by memory here, but in a way it kind of pairs okay with fucking Tim Burton. It's just not as good. Like, it's just like the series is degraded a little bit.
I remember liking Forever more than Returns.
I know you said that. And actually, something I saw got me really interested in Forever. I think it was something Earl from our other podcast said on Twitter, or like he retweeted it on Twitter, about how like the Batman Forever is like to this day the most accurate representation of the Batman mythos on film or whatever. I was like, really? I mean, I remember like you, it feeling like Forever and Like, I remember seeing them both at the time and liking them, but also even at the time, feeling that they were a step down. It was like one of the first early examples of me noticing, like, oh, we've shifted directors here, we've shifted the artistic vision a little bit, and also in very obvious ways, we have new casts, like we have new Batmans for both of these. Yeah. So, but I have not touched these movies probably since the 90s. So, we'll see.
Excited to revisit Forever.
Forever. When do you think was the last time you watched Forever?
Probably 15 years ago.
Okay, so it's a long time for both of us either way. Yeah. Again, I can't think of a time since I've been an adult where I've watched Forever or Batman and Robin.
It'll be interesting.
So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting, especially considering neither of these quite held up like how we remembered. We'll see. But all this superhero talk has got me excited to finally talk about the big new film for this week. A film that I have been waiting for quite a while. And that is Glass. But before we get into Glass, I just wanted to touch on, like, and set the table for, like, how we feel about this series and heading into it. So I'll just state up front, for me personally, like, Unbreakable, I remember seeing it for the first time in a hotel room in Vegas with my parents or whatever, and just being blown away by it. It's a movie that I've probably seen almost a dozen times now, and each time I see it, I like it more. Like, I just love it now. Like, I think it's easily, you know, if we ever do like a top 10 of all time, I'll make sure it is on the list next time. Like, of all movies of all time, like, that's how much I like the first Unbreakable.
Right.
I think it is a really, like, it's an adult drama that you figure out at the end is basically a comic, you know, a superhero origin story, right?
Right.
Which is weird. It's such a weird, like, twist, too, because, like, the movie's very upfront that it's about comic books. I guess most of it is you realize that, like, he could be a hero, but, like, the twist of it at the end is, like, who the villain is. It seems so obvious after you've seen it, but it was a great twist ending, I thought. I think that's the key to a great twist, is it seems so obvious after you see it, you know? So I love Unbreakable. Split came out 2 years ago. We reviewed it on here. So, you know, if you've been listening to the show, you kind of know how we felt about that. I thought that was a really fun thriller, but then it, like, hit in the last, like, 30 seconds, hits you over the head with, like, oh, my God. Like, it floored me anyways with, you just saw a villain origin story, and this is, like, in the Unbreakable universe, and it's kind of a sequel, right?
Right.
So I really loved it. Like, I loved it even more because of it, you know, it was reviving something that I loved, you know, 15 years earlier, like, and a movie that I've just grown to love more and more, right? And I rewatched both of them going into this, and I think, again, I liked Unbreakable more than I ever have, and Split, I thought, was held up fine. I thought Split was really cool. So what about you, like, going in the Glass, like, what is your history with these movies?
I like both. I really like Unbreakable a lot. Maybe not quite same level as you, but I really do respect it as a film. I think it's a great kind of redoing of comic book origins, but from, like, a completely different perspective of, like, this is in the real world. It's not we're not seeing the origin of Batman, we're not seeing the origin of Superman or Spider-Man or whoever.
We're seeing, like, the person that, like, those types of stories are based on. Like, I love that angle of Unbreakable.
Awesome concept. Split, I think, is a really good thriller. I was not quite as blown away by the last 30 seconds, but it is cool to, like, you see this all takes place in the same universe, and obviously was setting up for where we're going.
Yeah, so now we get, and it's interesting too, because at the time when M. Night Shyamalan released Unbreakable, he had hoped that it would be a trilogy, I think. And he had ideas for all the way back then. So we were talking, when the hell, year 2000 is when Unbreakable came out. So he had an idea for a trilogy. Who knows how much it evolved from then, but like, he had this idea, right? Unbreakable comes out, and it's not quite as loved as The Sixth Sense. And I think if you asked me at the time, I would have said that The Sixth Sense is a better film. I think most people today would say that. But, I mean, over time, I've just really, really grown to love Unbreakable. But, like, when I, at the time, I, and so, like, it, yeah, Unbreakable wasn't as quite loved. It didn't. Like, I think, like, you know, sequels was not greenlit or whatever, and so he just did Signs, and then he went to go on and do other things, right? And, like, it kind of grew over time. Like, Unbreakable was a movie kind of people, like, didn't quite love at first and came around on as time went on. I mean, I was on board with it right away, but, you know, it is one of those films, right? And so it kind of had this cult audience by the time Split came out. So, like, M. Night didn't get to do his trilogy initially, but now he's kind of getting, he's gotten to live it out, right? Like, he did Split, it has that surprise ending, and now he gets this third film to, like, tie it all up and shit. So he's had a lot of time to think about this. I wonder how much has changed. But what we have is the film that was released, and a film that, you know, I'm not going to apologize for it, but, like, I really enjoyed Glass.
I don't think you need to apologize for it at all.
Like, it's interesting, though, because, like, it was a movie that I think a lot of people were looking forward to, and then the reviews hit about a week before it came out, and mostly were negative. I think it's sitting at 35% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I've seen a lot of people come out since saying that they like it. They're very kind of, like, sheepish about it and apologetic about it, but I'm here to say that I'm not apologetic about it. I really fucking love Glass, but I can see why some people might give it a negative review. What say you before we start to dig into this? And then we'll go into deeper spoilers at the very tail end after we give our score, Chris.
That's similar thoughts. Like, I walked out of it liking it. It was exactly what I was expecting. Having seen the previous two movies and the trailers for this one, there's a lot of talking.
Like, yeah,
it's not a Marvel movie. It is not a DC movie. It is a comic book superhero type movie. But if you go in looking for, like, and maybe the trailers do a bad job of this, because, you know, in 2 minutes they show a lot of action.
They do kind of sell it as more of a normal superhero movie.
Yeah, and a lot of those scenes are in the last
like 10 minutes or yeah, you know, whatever
movie, because there's not a lot of action prior to that. But I don't know. I came away going, like, yeah, this makes sense for what those other two movies were.
It felt like everything clicking into place, and I guess I will say this. And it felt like everything clicking into place so much that I called two out of the three twists before it ended. Like, I leaned over to Melissa and I was like, this is this, this is that. The only twist I missed was the very last one. We'll get into that in spoilers. But but it felt right to me. Like, it made sense. Like, yeah, you could say it's goofy, kind of comic booky shit. It's so weird. Like, that's the point of the movie. It's a comic book. Like, yeah. Like, I've seen a lot of people be like, here's some of the negative criticism I've seen. They say it's goofy shit. And it's like, one, yeah, it's a comic book. And that's kind of the point. It's about comic books. The other thing I see is, oh, it's very preachy about comic books. And I'm like, so was fucking Unbreakable, dude. Like, the only way that you could, like, tell me that that's a valid criticism is if you also hated Unbreakable, which I know that some critics didn't. Like I said, a lot of critics didn't like it at the time, you know?
Yeah. And I could see, like, it, you know, if you didn't like Unbreakable and you came off of Split going, that was a cool thriller, and then you come to this, like, and it goes back to kind of talking a lot about how comic books are structured and the types of comic books there are, and how heroes and villains and how they are created and what their design makeup is and kind of what makes them tick. But I don't know. I feel that it's like, you watched from the beginning, you kind of know how this was all going to play out.
And really most of it is not, I don't think, preachy as much as pointing out like what it's doing, and where it's like, it'll be like, well, in comic books, this is what usually happens, and this is what's happening here. Like, right. Yeah, it's saying it for you, but that's what makes it this trilogy, is that it's about the thing. It's not just being the thing, too. Like, it's pointing it out to you and like, going, like, why aren't you surprised that this is what's happening? Because this is what happens in comics. And, like, that's what's cool about the series. So if you don't fucking like that, then you don't like, I get it. But don't tell me you like Unbreakable and then say that this is somehow bad because it does the same thing. Like,
right.
Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional about this. But another thing I saw people criticizing it too was that, like, oh, it builds up to this big confrontation in a parking lot. Spoilers. But it's in the trailer. And it's like, oh, you couldn't get like a cool, like, fucking setting to do the big showdown at. And it's like,
but it makes sense of, like, if you watch the entire movie, why it takes place there.
And there's a plot reason for one. There's a budget reason too. Like, Shyamalan was offered more money to do the movie, but he wanted to work with a smaller budget. Because I'm assuming that allows him to tell the story that he wants instead of having to take a bunch of notes and change things, right? But two, I think he likes working under the challenge of a smaller budget sometimes. None of the other ones were big budget movies at all, you know?
Right.
Three, these movies are about the fucking lasers and explosions and shit that are a fucking Marvel movie. Oh, like,
they're character pieces.
It's about the story. So it doesn't matter if it's in a parking lot or at the top of a fucking skyscraper. It's in fact better as almost like a play taking out on a field. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter where the fuck it is. Like, and that's just some of the things I've seen people say. Like, again, I could grant, especially if you're not into this series, like, this movie is not for, if you have not seen the other two movies, this is not for you.
No,
like, you're not going to have any fucking clue what is going on, you know?
Yeah, because you need the relationships of Unbreakable and Split for this to make any sense.
So, you know, before we get into spoilers and everything, I'm just going to say, like, I could see, even if you love the other two movies, I could see not loving this one as much because it is slow. You could not like some certain things that happen. And in fact, there's one thing that happened that I kind of was bummed out by, and we'll get into that in spoilers. But, like, it's just not, it's not, like, terrible at all. And I actually really personally enjoyed it. I felt like it was everything coming into place. I felt like all three of their stories pay off in really interesting ways, and including Casey, who is the Anya Taylor-Joy character. Her story plays out in an interesting way. I actually liked all the twists. I mean, I called them happening, so...
There's one I didn't, but...
Okay, and we'll get into it. But yeah, like, I saw, like, and it felt right to me. Like, it felt... Like anything Shyamalan does, it felt like really considered, and he poured over it and like tried to make things as airtight as possible and really thought about it. Like, and you either take it, you either like it or you don't. I really like, I felt like this honored all the characters. I felt like it was a worthy conclusion to it. And it made sense. Like, it made sense. And what it was, you know, what the motivations of what they were trying to do, the characters in this, and how things played out and how they relate to comic books. Like, it all felt right to me. And, you know, maybe we'll find out what twist you didn't like in spoilers, but I liked the ending. I liked the message of the ending. I liked kind of how it points to the future in a way that I think the Last Jedi does too. Just for example,
sure.
If you know what, if you get what I'm saying, and maybe we talk about that later. I love. I don't know if this is not really a spoiler. It's just something I didn't know going in. I guess really isn't touched on the trailer, but like I love that the actor who played his son in Unbreakable is the same actor here.
Yeah,
like everyone's kind of back. The band is back together, I love that Shyamalan used deleted scenes from Unbreakable here as flashbacks. I think it's a really clever use of your old material. It's like something fucking Don Coscarelli will do in fucking Phantasm and shit. Like, but it works really well here. You know, it's like he's got like this really well shot footage. That's stuff that he just didn't use from Unbreakable here. I don't know, man. It's one of those ones to me where it's like, I hate when people say this, but it's like for the fans. And I also like criticize other movies for doing this. Like I would criticize Infinity War for being a movie that doesn't stand up on its own. And this doesn't. You do need the others to watch this.
Yes.
Whereas Split, you could basically watch on its own.
And I do think that's a failing here. But as somebody that was, I don't know, I think it works better than Infinity War. Because like
it's for me.
I am invested in the Marvel stuff. Like I watch all those movies. I like all those characters, and I think ultimately, Infinity War does not stand on its own. Whereas I think Glass does. Yes, you need to have seen Unbreakable, and you need to have seen Split to kind of get everything. But it ultimately it clicks, and it was a satisfying resolution to all of those for me.
Yeah, and the other thing, while we're on the subject of Infinity War, you know, when I watch this, it feels like the end of a complete story, and, you know, I don't feel like it's going to take back any of the conclusions it makes, like,
right. Like
Infinity War. Not to throw shade at Infinity War, but I feel like I believe the ending here, like, is the ending.
Yeah. We didn't talk about new trailers this week, but new Spider-Man trailer came out this past week, and spoilers for Infinity War, but he's dead. Spider-Man and Nick Fury are dead at the end of Infinity War,
but we know they're not,
and this movie comes out after the new Avengers movie, so yeah, we know that they're not dead anymore.
happens, I guess. You know, here's the one big thing I will grant people, and I will agree with. I think this is not as good a film as Unbreakable. And I think the reason for that is because Unbreakable was an adult drama that was about human things first. It was about a guy who was depressed because he never figured out what he was supposed to do with his life. And it was, you know, he meets someone who is obsessed with figuring out what his life means. And that's like a very human, relatable thing, and I'm actually thinking about writing about like why Unbreakable is so great, and that's kind of like the center of it, you know, like
right
it that and you know, like show me a fucking Marvel movie that also focuses largely on like a languishing marriage, you know, like a very troubled marriage. That's a huge part of what's going on in Unbreakable, the father son relationship of. You know, the kid wanting to believe that he could be like his dad and wanting to believe his dad is special. Like, all those things are relatable, I think, to people. Whereas here, what we're doing is just playing out the comic book aspect of it that was set up by the end of the first one.
Yeah.
It does still have at its core Mr. Glass wanting to prove to the world and to him, and almost more to himself, that he's right. But yeah, it doesn't have quite the emotional stakes and human drama that made Unbreakable so great to me. So, but as a conclusion to the comic book story setup, I loved it. I really did. Like, even though it was mostly a lot of talking, and there were some funny moments too. There's a few jokes. I'm trying to think of the one that like really got me to laugh, but and there's some like surprising violence and kind of hardcore shit in it. And I also love how it starts with Mr. Glass, like, or not Mr. Glass, David Dunn going into like these bad guys' house and beating the shit out of them. Like, it was like such a cool, it was like, oh, we're starting this like a fucking comic book movie where it's like, now the dude is fucking doing shit. Like, it just, it was neat. But I guess we'll get into more specifics in our spoiler section. But if you have not seen the film yet, you know, you could end it with our score coming up. But I had fun with it, Chris. I'm going to give it 4 stars. Again, it's not the masterpiece Unbreakable is, but it's such a worthy conclusion to me. I was actually really satisfied with a lot of it, and I liked how it ended a lot. So how about you, Chris?
I'm also at a 4. I ultimately really liked it. I think it does. I think it you know, as somebody who likes comic book movies, this is a fascinating take on the genre, and kind of like an examination of comic books and,
you know, what they mean and what they mean to us. Like, I don't know.
It's a fascinating, it was a fascinating 3 films, and I am not upset that this was the culmination of it. So
I'm actually thrilled. I'm thrilled that Shyamalan got to make the movie that he wanted, I think, with this. And I think it's right. Like, I think he did, like, this is one that I think people are going to come around, just like Unbreakable and like did over time. Again, I don't think it's quite as amazing as Unbreakable, but I think people will come around on it. I think anyone who's a huge fan of Unbreakable is going to be like, this is it is like fan service. And it's weird too, because I remember it's funny because at the time, like when Unbreakable came out and it didn't quite do good enough to do the trilogy, I was like, you know what? It's kind of just perfect as it is. Maybe it doesn't need anything more than that. Like, it's all we need to see is like, that was an important story. Now we got these Archie movies, and guess what? I love them too. So whatever. So 4 stars, we're giving it a recommend. I'm the only caveat to that is like, you have to be a fan of the other two. You have to have at the very least seen the other two to possibly enjoy this. But yeah, I generally loved it, and we'll get into the spoilers right about now, Chris. I don't know where you want to start with the spoilers, maybe just the big twists or whatever, but just, or we just talk about other like specific things that you really liked. Like, I'll throw out a specific thing I really liked. I liked when Mr. Glass slipped the dude's throat. It's like, damn, that was dude.
A good scene. Yeah.
Anyway, so what were you gonna say?
I really like the kind of throwbacks. You mentioned it a little bit in our non-spoiler section with like David Dunn going back and looking at some of that. There's one scene in particular that I really liked that kind of showcased Glass's intellect, though, at even a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's at this like amusement park, carnival type thing, and he's walking around with these two giant stuffed bears.
Yeah.
He gets on the teacups, which spin around. So, like, obviously not a great place for somebody that, like, if you touch them the wrong way, their bones could break.
Well, it's like a tilt-a-whirl. Yeah. You know, like a, yeah.
So, like, he gets into that, and he, like, positions the bears on either side of him so that, like, basically he'd have cushions. And then he ties his sweater over the front bar. Mm-hmm. It was just like, yes, this kid was like a genius from like step one. Like, he was having so much fun that he ultimately ended up getting very hurt from it, but because the bear slipped out of the way. But it was just like, yeah, like this kid's fucking brilliant. Like,
you had never seen that scene before?
No.
So I've seen it. Like, I used to have like the fucking Infinifilm DVD or whatever the hell, you know, back in the day. And that was on there. And I remember thinking also it was like a really well shot scene. Like the, you get the camera angle from like where he's fallen down inside of the ride. I really love that stuff. And there's some stuff that they use that is actually from, you know, the release film. Like, there's a part near the end where it kind of flashes back to one of my favorite moments in all of Unbreakable. which is the end after he saved the people and he slides the newspaper across to his son and shows him, like, you were right, like, that was me, and
right,
like, that was a really powerful scene in Unbreakable, and it's just cool having them, like, throw that, like, you know, like, you could tell, like, Shyamalan was really, like, wanting to hit those notes of what made that shit fucking great and kind of, like, echo that. Trying to think what else, again, there was some funny, like, one-liner stuff. I want to say, do you remember any, like, the big real, like, laugh lines? Like,
I mean, there's an amusing part with Daryl. He's the orderly. I think he's the orderly that I believe gets, is he the one that gets killed?
Yeah, he gets killed.
So. But when Glass is kind of setting up his plan to escape, Daryl is like talking to the security guard, and just like, it's just funny, like how he's like talking about his diet, and
yeah, it's like a long,
it's long, it's drawn out, like.
It's almost like the Bon Me scene in fucking Halloween where the two cops are talking about sandwiches and shit. Where it's just like this goofy thing in there for no reason. I just thought of one that, like, I thought was pretty fucking hilarious, which was there's a part where Kevin switches personalities and he turns in, like, he was crying and then he switches into Hedwig, the little 8-year-old, and he rubs tears from his eyes. He's like, was that crying? Little pussy. Yeah. Just like there was moments of humor that actually, like anytime someone went for a joke, and sometimes he comes off as a kind of like stiff and I don't know, sometimes he's a little clunky with his dialogue and stuff, but like I thought that the jokes here landed really well. They were like they helped lighten up the mood a little bit because this movie is so kind of like dour.
And I think James McAvoy does a great job throughout.
He's so good. Yeah.
He hits every single one of them. They're all different personalities.
He can do it all in one take, like multiple personalities at once. Like, it's insane. Yeah, so there's lots of funny parts. Anyways, if we think of anything else as we're talking to us about it specifically, we'll touch on it. But why don't we just get into the big plot points and then reveals and stuff? And maybe, you know, not even just, like, we could just discuss the big twists, but we could just discuss the plot in general. Yeah, let's start with the plot in general. Was there anything, like, specifically you wanted to touch on or you thought really, like, worked or didn't work?
I mean, I liked the idea that, you know, building off of the end of Split, that David Dunn has gone out and he is now, like, hunting Kevin and the Beast.
I like that they have, like, that he is, like, runs a security company with his son now.
Yeah.
And that, like, his son helps him do his fucking crime fighting.
He's basically, like,
he's like Oracle. Yeah, exactly. That was really fucking neat. I like how, one thing I thought was cool is, like, you don't see Glass until, like,
it's a while in,
30 minutes into the movie, yeah.
And even then, he is out of it for even a while
for most of the movie.
Yeah,
he's like comatose for most of the movie. And then, like, you reveal, like, it's, you know, you see it coming, you know, it's coming that, like, he's actually, you know, conscious and planning shit. I don't know, and like, I had no problem with, like, it ended up in this, like, mental hospital where they're just kind of like talking about shit for most of the movie, because I was riveted by the conversations. I love when she brings them all into the pink room or whatever color that was, like, where they're all sitting there together. They're all getting to hear each other's fucking bullshit. And yeah. Bruce Willis is just looking at the other ones like, what? Like, he's like looking at Kevin like, what the fuck is going on here, dude? And like, when they roll Mr. Glass in, you're like, you gotta be kidding me.
He's right. like this one too?
That guy killed everyone on my tree. Yeah. And I like that whole, like, I like the whole conversation in that scene where she's like growing him and shit. He's like, no, you're creating memories and shit that didn't happen. That's not how it happened. You know, like, I think, and one other thing I'll touch on before we get into, I guess the twist is I liked Bruce Willis's performance again. Like, I really like his understated performance in Unbreakable, and I liked him here. Like, I know a lot of people accuse him of sleepwalking, and maybe you could accuse him of that here, but I liked him.
It works here.
Yeah.
It's not really much different than his performance in like Death Wish last year, but it works for this character.
It works for David Dunn. Like, yeah. He's like this wounded, like sad person, you know? And like,
yeah,
he like just, you know, realizing his potential and what he was supposed to do is the, what he's kind of getting some joy out of. But, you know, here he's like lost his wife and whatever. I don't know. I thought it was a good performance. I thought they all, like, again, Sam Jackson doesn't get a lot to do until near the end, but I really loved what he did.
Too. Yeah, but once he is, like, active,
yeah, he's great.
He is, like, scene-stealing, and he is obviously in command of everything.
Yeah, yeah, he's really good. So let's get into the twists. The first really big twist is that the Beast, his dad, was on the train that Glass bombed all those years ago that Bruce Willis was the only survivor of. Now, I had read a theory of this. Like, someone had a theory of this, and I had read it prior to the film. So, I don't know if you were aware of that theory or not.
So no, but...
definitely saw this twist coming.
I mean, I did not know about it, but it like when it hit, it was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like,
yeah. If you watch Split, and like, you know, it is a sequel to Unbreakable, it's pretty obvious in that actually too, because there's a scene near the end of Split where he goes to like the train station and he lays flowers there. It's like, if you know Split as a sequel to Unbreakable and you're watching that, you're like, makes sense,
yeah.
And like, you know, there's allusions to his dad throughout the two films, you know, Split and Glass, where it's like, they're super vague about where was his father while his mom was abusing him, you know, right, and right. It's because his dad died. And then, you know, I forgot if he says it in Split, he might even say it in Split, something about how his dad lives on a train, is what he says. So I'm like,
so that makes sense.
Like, the groundwork for that twist was laid in Split for sure, for sure, for sure. Like, if you rewatch Split, it's like, I don't know how you watch that movie again and like miss it. You know what I mean? Like, even before this one came out, like, to miss that, it seems like a super obvious thing that his dad died on a train. And if you know it's a sequel to Unbreakable, then you know what train he died on.
Yeah.
Another thing given that way is like, this thing started to be called the East Rail 177 trilogy, so like everything would have to tie back to the train, yeah. So that was not a huge surprise to me, but I was happy. Like, I believed it too. Like, going in after having rewatched Split, I was like, that theory, and that theory, like I said, that theory was written like 2 years ago. I'm like, that theory's correct. Like, it's going to be correct, and it ended up being correct. So when you saw it, you just were like, yeah, that makes sense.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this whole time, Glass has been I think he calls himself the mastermind in the movie itself. But, I mean, he's been pulling the strings from the get-go. It makes sense that he would create a hero and a villain.
Yeah, it feels like a comic book like thing. Yeah. Like, it makes sense. So yeah, and I really dig it. And like, that's like the pain that he wanted. Like, they kind of talk about that here too. Like, think of a moment when you wish you were strong. It's like everything in, you know, the Beast comes from him wanting to get over his dad dying, you know,
right?
And like his mom abusing him and shit. So then following that is finding out that Sarah Paulson, like the lady who kind of brings them all in and is doing all the psychiatric tests on them, works for like this shadowy organization that runs everything. And they were trying to, you know, the whole movie is her trying to like convince them that they're not superheroes, that they're just mentally ill.
Right.
When in fact, what she really was is this part of this organization of like powerful people who had decided that the world can't have gods. And so we have to, you know, their way of dealing with it is like rooting out people like these people and convincing them or putting them into an institution for their whole life.
Yeah, and this is the one that I was not like a huge fan of.
I'm so on board with it. But okay, explain why you didn't like it.
It's like it just added fluff that I don't think was necessarily needed. I think the you know, the glass connections between Dunn and Kevin are enough that like we didn't need this extra shadowy villain, like this super villain over everything that's pulling all the strings for the entire like world and hiding everybody from reality. It's fine. It's just I was like, I didn't really need it.
To me, I like it because of the thoroughness. Like M. Night Shyamalan, for me, has some kind of similarities, for me, anyways, with Dean Koontz, in that there has to be an explanation for everything. Like, everything has to be wrapped up with a tidy bow, like, and well thought out. And, like, I like the idea that, yeah, there would also be like maybe people that decided that like these people can't exist. And also on top of it, like in comic books, a lot of times there are shadow organizations that kind of run things behind the scenes, you know, like think about what's the one in Batman.
They're generally not revealed in the origin story. And maybe that's some of my problem with it too, is because At the end of this movie, as Mr. Glass is dying,
yes,
Mom is like, "Well, like this is supposed to be like a limited edition. Like there was supposed to be the big showdown somewhere else. Like this isn't how it was supposed to be." And he was like, "Mama, this never was a
limited. This is all. I've always
been an origin story.
I love that line. Like I got chills when he said that. I was like, oh my god.
So yeah, like it was a great line. Like it's something that really resonated. And then." I didn't need this extra fluff in that. Like, you don't need that for the origin story.
That's well, something you bring in a later. Way, though, because the thing is he's trying to expose to the world right, what they yeah. are, and then you have this organization that's trying to stop that. So, like, I dug it. Like, I dug it, and I felt it coming. Like, I knew from the beginning she wasn't on the level, and I knew because, like, it was never specifically stated who the fuck she is, what authority she has to fucking, like, take them in and do things to them. Like, it was just kind of like, she showed up with a bunch of cops and was like, "You're coming with me." It was like, "Who the fuck are you, dude? Like, what government agency are you?" You know what I mean? Like, that's like that was the tip off to me. So like the whole time I'm like, you know what it is? Is it's like the government? I thought it was the government trying to control them. Well, I mean, I guess it kind of could be. It's powerful people, right? So
yeah,
could be government people involved in that, but
just rich people.
So like, I felt it coming. It felt like it fit to me, like all that. I was fine with it. I thought it was cool. But I guess there's two issues that we have to touch on here. There's two things I didn't like, and one is when he said that. This is an origin story. I thought he was referring to David Dunn's son as well as Casey. I thought that they were going to like, I thought
that they had powers too.
Not only that they just had powers, but I seriously thought they were going to start like shooting fucking lasers out of their hands and shit. And I would have fucking like, I would have loved it. I would have thought it was like, if they stepped into the fight and started fucking like right after, like I thought right after he said, this is an origin story. I thought that because like, right when he said that, David Dunn's son is like kneeling down and crying. I thought he was gonna rise up and his eyes were gonna be fucking like glowing or something, and he was gonna fuck shit up. You know, I was like, oh no! So like, that was one disappointment for me, is that that's not what he meant by that.
No, he meant like origin of like the superheroes.
But did that occur to you that like maybe like I don't know why I thought, because for me I thought, okay, maybe his son has it through DNA, and maybe she has it because she's special like the Beast, like she's had bad things happen to her.
Well, you know? That is something like I could see, because like that is why the Beast let her go.
Yes, so I thought like, that's why that they would be like the next in line.
Yeah,
like,
and the way Split ends, like with the extra scene that ties it to Unbreakable, you do look back and go, maybe she also has powers.
Yeah,
but I never thought, like,
dude, I was like, ooh, I like was leaning over my girlfriend, like, ooh, it's gonna be them. And I was like, I was wrong on it. And then she fucking holds Bruce Willis in a puddle and kills him, and I fucking hated that. Just because I didn't want David Dunn to die. Like, I just, it's like, why the fuck did you have to kill this motherfucker?
Right, like,
you could have had him live, and the story doesn't change that much. Like, you could have, I don't know. Like, it could have been still like, fuck, you're fucked, the story's out, and you have to let us go, or whatever, you know? Like, she lets the kids go, you know?
Yeah, that's also weird, right? Like, oh, we're going to tie this all down.
So like, the kids get to walk away, but yeah. I drown your father in a puddle. Like,
right.
Okay. That's fucking crazy, dude. So those are two. Like, I didn't want him to die, but because I actually really loved his character, so I was like, God damn it, dude! But I thought like the end of it, like the final twist is that Mr. Glass didn't want him to have a big showdown, like at like a limited edition or whatever. He wanted them to just go all over the fucking hospital because of how many cameras they had there, and he was fucking uploading it to his mom, who was going to spread it to the world. And so that the world could know that people like them exist, and maybe they are one of them, you know?
Right. Like,
and they I love that.
The entire time wasn't we're going to go to this non-existent tower in Philadelphia, because that tower does not exist. but instead, like, yeah, I'm going to give the proof to the people that care about us, and that would want to make it known that, like, that, hey, there are special people out there.
Yeah, and I like, do you dig that, like, ending? Like,
yeah, I did. I like the ending, yeah.
And it kind of, like, suggests that, you know, there could be all these stories from here, even though I hope that this is, like, the end of it. But it kind of suggests, like, oh, we could go into all sorts of millions of directions. Yeah,
Sarah Paulson, like, before she finds out about the fact that it's all kind of exploded when she finds out his actual master plan. But before that, she's like, I'll be moving on to the next city. I was like, oh, well, I guess they could continue to do like this kind of government conspiracy eradication of supers.
I think even if this film made $1 billion, I don't think Shyamalan wants to do that. It's just, like, the idea is to leave it on that note that, like, we could keep telling
that it could.
Stories like comic books do. We keep telling these stories, you know?
Yeah, but we don't have to because we
have
our story.
We've gotten our thesis out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing I wanted it to almost go a little goofier where, like, so, like, the ending is them sitting in this train station, like, you know, waiting for shit to pop up on Twitter and, like, everyone to see it and whatnot, right? Like, I wanted, like, because, and then it ends with, like, basically everyone's looking at the story, and then you realize the possibility that maybe someone else out there will be inspired and realize that they're heroic or whatever, right? I wanted at the very end, like, the last shot to be someone looking up from their phone, pointing out their fist and flying away like Superman. Like, that's what I wanted. And I know it would have been goofy, but I would have fucking adored that ending, dude. Like, so those are my only like little criticisms. I otherwise generally really love all those little twists.
Yeah, I like it. As somebody from Philadelphia, I love it.
On top of that, I keep forgetting that, like, yeah, how much he honors Philly in all of his movies.
Like, the tons of shots of the skyline, it using like the like straight everything looks authentic. It like to Philadelphia and this straight, like, those look like Philadelphia police cars. They look like Philly cop. The city is obviously huge skyline shot.
And then, like, all of Split takes place inside of the actual zoo, right? Yeah, like
the Philadelphia Zoo. And like, I even love like that. And there's like only little things that like people that don't live in Philadelphia and
wouldn't even pick up on.
Yeah. Like, so like the newscaster, that like he's you see him a couple times.
That's so cool. Like, it's a local, like, reporter.
He's a local guy, that he's like a local anchor.
That's so awesome. So
yeah, it's really cool that like he gets the details right, and it's like, yes, he loves the city and he's putting it on as a showcase.
What do you think of my insane final shot? Would you like what like What would your reaction have been to that? Like,
what the fuck is he doing? Because like it's such a subtle movie. Like,
yeah,
everything.
Maybe that would have been a bit much. Subtle.
Yeah,
maybe that would have been a bit. But like, but that's like the suggestion is though that like it would go to the next level. Like there would be people that could do that. Maybe like although he does say at one point like yeah you can't fly, but like yet there are people who and it's. True what he says, like just people that can bend steel, like you don't know how they do it, but they do, like you know. So yeah, I just I am not apologetic about this one. I think I got like out of my system what I wanted to say about it, really, but
I really like it. I appreciate what it is. It's a great start to the year for films. I mean, no, it's not as good as Unbreakable. It's not as good as Split even, but I think as somebody that likes both of those movies,
yeah,
it is super satisfying.
I think it's not as good a standalone film as Split, like because you could watch Split on its own kind of, but I think like for me anyways, being such a huge fan of Unbreakable, like I like this one probably second best just because it's addressing so much of Unbreakable again, you know. Like it's more way more overt sequel to both of those films. Yep. But yeah, I had a blast. I loved it. There's little things like I said I would have changed. Some of them would make it maybe better or worse, but they didn't ruin it. I liked the whole gist of what he was going for with the whole ending there. Like it all felt right to me.
Yes. Totally so, agree.
So that's that. I have no idea what I'll have for next week. Here's what I have: Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. I can guarantee you that
I will have those two. We could talk replicas next week.
Oh shit! I'm so sorry, I forgot.
No, I'm sorry. It's not that important.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people forgot that one. We'll talk about it though.
And now I might watch one of those fire documentaries.
Oh yes, I was just going to bring that up, the Netflix one I'm going to watch, because it's actually the director of American Movie, which is a movie I love. So
okay, yeah, because there's two. There's one on Hulu, and then there's one on Netflix.
Yes.
So I don't know if I'll watch both, but I'll try and watch one of them.
Go with Netflix, buddy. At least I just from the pedigree alone, that's why I would go with it. But
all right.
But yeah, we'll be back next week with at least those.
Yeah.
Movie dudes.